Hi there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. And now, enjoy the show. Hi everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. On today's episode of Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about alternate methods of awarding XP. Now, I should say, Paul, that unfortunately we planned to have a guest, Adriel Wilson, on today, and unfortunately she was unable to make it. So hopefully we'll be able to reschedule her at another time, because I was really looking forward to talking to her myself.
Yeah, me too. It's too bad. Viewers should know that Adriel does have a Kickstarter live right now. I assume that won't be live when we reschedule. But if you want to check it out, it's at Kickstarter. I believe it is called Monster Mix. So go take a look, peek at that on Kickstarter.
Looks like a good project there, actually.
Yeah, pretty interesting. It's a two-player RPG. It revolves around making mixes for someone that's important to you, as some of us may have done in the past.
Yeah, it's a great throwback.
yeah, it's pretty good. So definitely check that out. That's at Kickstarter.com. Look, just do a search for Monster Mix, and you'll find it.
Cool. So hopefully we'll have Adriel back on a future episode. So what we are talking about today is, you know, you and I, Paul, have both been grappling with how to award XP issues just in the last week or so, and which is something I keep coming back to time and time again myself. And I've also seen, you know, younger players on the social media have, you know, very different sensibility towards those things. Than I do sometimes. So right from the get-go, right, even in classic Gygaxian D&D, he changed that up in a really radical way right at the outside, right? So you go into the Little Brown Books, OD&D Volume 1, and very brief, not super explicit rule on how to award XP, but what it seems to be saying is you get 100 XP per hit dice of monster that you've defeated, and 1 XP per gold piece that you've retrieved. And there's a little example of it there. And then within the year, with the first supplement, there's a totally radical revision on how to award XP, in which he just calls the initial version ridiculous. That's all you get. He doesn't justify that any other way. He just says, oh yeah, that 100 XP per hit dice, parenthesis, ridiculous. That's it.
That's funny.
Why is it ridiculous? We have no idea what was on his mind about that.
I could certainly speculate a lot of possibilities there, either just a lot of negative feedback or something that was edited in at last minute because they didn't have something and, oh crap, how do you give XP? I don't know. Base it on money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I would really like to know.
Now, the interesting thing, I think, is that both you and I actually now prefer that method, right? Or at least
that's how I've been running.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It makes it a lot. I mean, as far as the main thing we'll talk about a little bit later is like logistics. It's just logistically, the fact that it's linear makes everything so much easier. I can just do it right at the end of a session perfectly fine.
Now, let me actually qualify my statement there. I prefer that method for games like Dungeons & Dragons or any game, I think, really, where you want that that setting of players are sort of self-interested, maybe ne'er-do-wells, or it doesn't even have to be ne'er-do-wells, but are like, you know, their main goal is to self-aggrandize, right? They're treasure hunters, they're you know, whatever it is. I think that it's actually important for me that the XP system backs up the central themes you want in your game.
I agree. Now, on the one hand, I feel like that's a, you know, late era interpretation of what it's for, but I think it's a correct interpretation. I think that that's correct, that what you're giving the awards for, promotes and incentivizes particular behavior at the table. And I totally agree that it's best to have those things aligned. You know, if you're not simply attracting players to that play style, you're at least communicating what the expectation is. So even though that's kind of a later interpretation, I think that is correct. And I think it does open the door to modifying it however you want in a lot of ways to possibly create different behavior. But traditionally, you're totally replicating a Conan or a Fafford and the Grey Mouser where, yeah, they're mercenaries and they're freebooters. And that's exactly what the expected action is.
All right, so let's get back to the history of it. You were mentioning that after the LBBs, we move away from XP for treasure and we move towards...
Well, no, it's the opposite. My point there is in the original LBBs, it's large awards for monsters. It's 100 XP per hit die. And the change a year later with the first supplement is to radically diminish the XP at least at lower levels for monsters. So you went from 100 XP for a one hit die monster to only 10 XP for a one hit die monster. Now, weirdly, there's this quadratic curve to it. So that, like, basically at one hit die, you get 10, at two hit die, you get 40, at three hit die, you get about 90. And then when you get up to 10 hit dice, then it goes back linear again, just like it did before. But for some reason, at levels 1 through 9, it's radically diminished. So whereas maybe before, maybe you were getting about a 50-50 ratio of monsters to treasure, now you're going to get a much higher ratio that you're dependent on from the treasure. Like maybe now it's 80% treasure and 20% monsters or something like that. And that revised, table-based non-linear monster awards is what they used in AD&D and BX and Holmes Basic and the entire, Mentzer Basic and the entire, all through the later 70s and 80s and 90s actually was on that same system, particularly for monsters. And then you have a system where clearly the treasures are far more important. Which many of us are more...
I feel like my experience is not quite that cut and dry thereof.
Okay.
Certainly, I would say... So when I'm running OD&D, last time I was running an OD&D campaign, I was giving 100 XP per hit die of monster killed and 1 XP for every silver piece of treasure gained. Now, I know that sounds like I've increased the treasure by a factor of 10, but I'm also playing with a repressed economy, so that's gone down by a factor of 10, so that evens out, right? So that should be about what? That should be straight out of the LBBs, right?
You and I use this modification where our economy is silver-based, not gold-based.
Right, but still the numbers, the relative value of XP for treasure versus XP for monsters there should be pretty much the same as what you're going to see in the LBBs, I assume.
Agreed, yeah, agreed.
My experience is that while that is, especially at the low levels, a lot more XP for monsters than you would get in, say, like BX, which has the weird chart, that overall, there are still these moments of massive treasure finds when I was running my campaign, that was the big moment of like, oh, okay, now we're all going to jump level because we just got this hoard of treasure. And that...
Agreed. Yeah, the treasure's a lot more swingy, but I will say I also have these sessions where they don't get any treasure at all. But they've chopped through a huge horde of monsters, and they get a fairly sizable chunk of XP just for monsters and no treasure.
Right. But my gut is, and I haven't really charted this except for Dyson's Delve, actually. So I guess I have charted this. Right. Is that actually the majority does come from treasure on average?
Interesting. Now it's gonna depend on your dungeon, right?
Yep.
Because at the root, one thing that I've pointed out a couple times is that in the LBBs, at the root, the amount of treasure is fundamentally based on DM fiat, right? Yep. There actually isn't really. There's a lot of systems by which to place incidental or additional treasure, but the core rule is make a dungeon. DM places what treasure they want.
Yep.
Period.
Yep.
So that's really going to depend on how much treasure the DM has decided to put in their dungeon.
Yep.
And maybe Dyson put a lot more than Gygax.
Yeah, it's a fair point, right? At that point, it's totally in the DM's hands as to how fast the levels are going to go because it's in the DM's hands on how much treasure is going to come out. Yep.
Right.
I agree with that.
And that's not true for other editions, actually. So when you get to third, you know, like when you get to third edition, there are very explicit guidelines about how much treasure people should be getting per level. Looking at zero edition and first edition, that doesn't exist at that point.
Right.
So it was actually a lot more explicit about DM decides how much treasure he wants to give out, he or she, or they.
Okay. So do you want to talk more about what happens in later than LBB, but before third edition?
Well, let me talk a little bit more history. So, at least at, like once you switch to the first supplement, you have a system where probably it's pretty clear you're going to be getting most of your XP from treasure.
Mm-hmm.
What about magic items? So as someone in your situation coming from BX, you probably haven't spent a lot of time dealing with that. But there is one little parenthetical note in the LBBs is players are going to be getting experience for monsters and treasure and coins and gems and jewelry and magic items.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's it. Right.
Not as if they give gold piece value for magic items anywhere.
They don't.
Yeah. So right. what the heck's that mean?
Right. There you go. So in a strategic review article, I think like 1975, mm-hmm. Guy Gack gives a little bit more, you know, suggestions. He says, well, I would keep the awards low, like maybe for a potion, 100 XP, maybe for a sword, 1,000 XP. That's more or less all you get. But that's actually the first time you get any numbers to it at all.
Fascinating.
To my mind, those aren't really small awards.
No, that sounds pretty big.
Right. And if I take that and look at like Gygax's, you know, a level one Greyhawk dungeon, that actually increases the awards by about 2/3 there. So at that point, you know, you've got like one unit for monsters, 2 units for coin treasure, and then 2 units for magic items. That's actually a pretty big swing.
Yeah.
And then you have this bifurcation where he totally stuck with that through advanced D&D first edition, second edition, with these big comprehensive tables giving an award for every single item in the game, totally missing from basic D&D. So totally, completely absent from Holmes, BX, Mensa, just not there. And the weird thing is if you try to use, you know, supplements or modules in both, they never address this enormous gap in the XP awards of giving stuff for magic items and not. So there's this other, you know, addendum of like, are you giving awards for magic items? Are you giving it to the whole party? Are you giving it to individuals? How are you figuring that out? And that's a whole separate component about where your awards are. So you can, recently I've had some discussions with people debating. I put a survey on the original D&D forums, mm-hmm. almost perfectly 50-50 split. No consensus to that at all. It's like half the people say, yep, that's what the books say. And half the people say, nope, there's all kinds of problems with that. So no consensus even to the oldest school players about that.
Interesting.
Did you ever, have you ever played a game in D&D where you used that?
Where I used XP for magic items?
Yeah.
Never.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Right. So there are times Ash points out that even the modules from that era don't include XP for magic items.
Right. Absolutely.
There's no explicit call out there.
Yep, absolutely.
That's honestly totally out of left field for me, and I don't think I even realized that was a thing until you told me just now.
Yeah, if you look at the first edition AD&E book, right, the magic item tables are all that. The tables are all, here's all your magic items page after page, and here's, you know, the gold piece value if you sell it, and here's the XP value if you keep it.
Hmm. Fascinating.
Yeah. It's a huge component.
Yeah. Never used it.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's a huge pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Right. So the logistics of it is with like linear monster XP, right? I can just add up all the hit dice that have been defeated, right? Mm-hmm. And that's like, what's 1 + 2 + 5 + 7? That's easy. And then multiply that by 100. But when you use the table-based monster XP, you can't do that anymore. You have to look up every single individual monster in the table, add that all up. You have to look up every single individual magic item that they've retrieved, right, in a big table and add that up. And you don't have time to do that at the table when your session ends. You've got to do that off session, spend an hour with a spreadsheet doing that. It's a huge pain in the ass.
Honestly, for me, when you first introduced me to the idea of just doing XP as 100 XP per hit die of monster, That was a huge load off for me. Previously, having dealt with BX tables, I despised using those. I never remembered what it was. What I was really relying on was that maybe the monster entry just tells me what the XP, it like pre-calculates it for me. Great, because I don't want to do that math. But then I love putting custom monsters in. I love tinkering with monsters or altering them or adding new, you know, inventing whole new stuff. And I was like, oh, how much XP do I give for this thing? I don't know. Right. Yep. And then I got to do all this crazy math and table looks up, and I hated it. Absolutely hated it. So switching to something like very simple, like 100 per hit die was really nice for me.
Right. Right. We should be making components. And honestly, I think that those awards are the single hardest thing in game design. It's easy. It's relatively easy to make pieces, but, you know, assigning costs and rewards for them, you know, in my book is like 80% of the game design effort.
Yep.
So those are non-trivial tasks. Absolutely.
All right. Yeah. So are you ready to look ahead into the future here? Because our first chat message, is milestone XP is terrible.
Okay.
So have you done any? So who's milestone XP, right? Fifth edition introduces milestone XP, which is just at whatever point in the game the DM says, now everyone's level 2, now everyone's level 3. End of story, right? It's the party as a group hits a milestone, everyone levels up.
Can I ask, not seeing the chat right now. Who said that in the chat?
David did.
Okay. Because it's interesting because looking at the people I follow on Twitter, it looks to me like for younger players, it's a total no-brainer that everybody's on board with milestone XP and doesn't want to do anything else.
Right. Well, that's
the impression I get from you.
Here's my take on that. It's simple, right? It is just so easy. And it solves a lot of tricky problems that some players struggle with. I'm not saying I like these solutions, but it does attempts to solve these problems such as we have a brand new player. What level are they? How do they catch up, right? Like those things.
So frankly, those were my questions about milestone XP. I don't understand how
everyone's that level, right? The party is level 6. Everyone is level 6. End of story.
Forever and ever.
Until the DM says everyone's level 7, then everyone's level 7.
Okay. So a new player comes in, they're just immediately level 7.
I believe so. I believe that's that. Okay. I mean, I might be totally wrong because I glazed over it and went, well, that's terrible. And I don't use it. But, I don't know. I understand where it comes from. Let me put it that way. I understand where it comes from. I don't like it. But, I mean, here's the thing, right? Like, you know, some people will, I think, dislike it. Let's talk about why to dislike it. And I think the initial immediate obvious reason to dislike it is like, well, it's just totally up to the DM, right? It doesn't matter what the players do. DM just says we're this level and we're this level, right? But the fact is, I think we kind of always had that. There were just layers of abstraction. As we just discussed, how much XP do you get for your treasure? Well, it depends on how much treasure do you put in. How much treasure do you put in? Well, it's really up to the DM to figure that out. So it kind of already was pure DM fiat, but just abstracted by a couple layers.
Okay. Counter argument.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That method of you know placing treasures in the world sets the stakes, right? The DM is not saying today I've awarded you this.
It's true.
They're saying here's a rumor or a place or a legend or a thing you can scry to discover that here's where there's a big reward, and it's up to you whether you get some of it, part of it, all of it. Whether you do it in a small group and therefore a higher reward, whether you bring in more players to have a larger group to make sure you secure that, right? And so there's a lot more iterations on the player's end about how they scout it, find it, approach it, take it, team up on it, than just you've done a nice thing and everybody gets the same reward.
And here's the other problem is I don't like introducing new players to the table at the same level as everyone else. I don't like that. So I thought about this a lot for 10 Dead Rats because I ultimately wrote my own system for 10 Dead Rats on how to award XP. primarily because I was using OD&D and Warhammer 2nd Edition as my two inspiration points. And Warhammer 2nd Edition is pretty hand-wavy about how XP gets out. But I knew that content-wise, that my players were going to be incredibly weak, and that the story was going to demand of them to frequently run away and not take big risks, right? They need to be, take very calculated risks because they're in a lot of danger all the time. So I wanted to make sure that they were getting awarded for doing that, right? And so so what I really wanted was XP awards that more awarded them thinking strategically or in character or whatever, coming up with their own plans and executing them, rather than something that awarded them for something I came up with ahead of time, get treasure, kill monsters, whatever. And so as I did that, as I started working on that system, I was looking at... you know, it started with OD&D XP chart as a base, and then figuring out how to give XP. And now I'm losing my train of thought. Oh no, what we're talking about, milestone and GM fiat, right? And gaining levels, right? So I knew if they died and they came back, I wanted them to start over at the beginning. And one of the things I love about OD&D is the geometric progression per level. That I think is ideal, because that means that if we're all level 5 and you come in at level 1, it is going to take you almost no time to hit level 4. And then
I found that recently.
Yeah,
it's a great point, and I wanted to make the same point, because I found that recently with my players with their henchmen, right? Mm-hmm. The henchmen are even getting half XP, you know, off the top of anything else, and they still are leveling up. And like, I turn around twice, and all of a sudden somebody has a fourth level henchman that I didn't realize, right. And I was really happy about that surprise. That was actually kind of fun.
It's nice, right? I mean, I still want those characters to experience that started at level 1 and grew, right? I don't want them to just come in with this, because you come in at a higher level and you have all this stuff, and it's just, where did this come from? You pre-baked it. You get more in that area of, like, this character was built rather than this character grew.
Right.
So I want you to start at first level, and I don't mind if the first couple of sessions, it's like, yep, you leveled up this session again. Yep, you leveled up this session again. It's fine. That's fine. You're catching up.
And, you know, as an old school player where, you know, the game is just a couple steps removed from a board game or war game, like, I actually do want some kind of incentive built in to avoid player death or level loss or something like that, right? Then I'm like, well, how do you deal with undead level loss if everybody's all the same level? You know, how do you make that horrific element be part of it? So just like, you know, you're playing chutes and ladders, and you would really, really like to avoid one of the chutes that send you back down towards the bottom part of the board. I would really not want people to be blasé about losing their character, because they can just, you know, walk on set with a high level character immediately thereafter. So,
I mean, I think,
you know, and that can seem punishing. I think in the modern view, that can seem punishing. But personally, I like incentives like that of gain and loss literally built into the mechanics of the game.
I definitely like incentives. And I do think, I feel very strongly that XP awards have to incentivize the players to partake in the kind of play you want to see at the table. But I think that, and this is one of the plays where I think just OD&D just got it 100% right, is if you're willing to allow for the fact that your characters are going to have disparate amounts of XP, you need some system that's going to translate that XP to put them at relatively the same power level most of the time. Yep. Right? Because, it sucks that you're first level and everyone else is seventh level, right? That's a huge power distortion there, and you feel like your character sucks. And I think that's okay for a session. And it's terrible if you do that for week after week after week.
Agreed. So that was my essential, you know, that was my first question about milestone leveling, is I guess I was assuming that people always started at first or some kind of base level. And with milestone leveling, everybody would always have that differential forever.
I know. If I mean, I may be completely wrong here, because I think I read it once and then moved on. But I'm pretty sure everyone comes in at the same level. Folks in the chat, please correct me if I'm getting this one wrong. I don't feel like reaching over there and getting my player's handbook out.
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is that the original awards also incentivize people to come to the game, right? Mm. And again, maybe someone can counter argue with me about like that should, you know, people shouldn't be punished for not being able to show up or something like that. But, you know, literally coming to the game gets you higher rewards, you know, gets, yep. you know, gets your character to become more of a feature. And I always thought that that was, I kind of actually like that slightly breaking the fourth wall. The mm-hmm. more you put into it as a player, the more your murky mirror character actually accrues in game. And I actually kind of don't mind the game being incentivized that you get more the more you actually yeah. come in.
I agree with that. You know, one of my favorite methods for dealing with absent players back in the day was your character becomes a henchman while you're gone, which means you get half XP.
Right. And it's you good. Know, I prefer not doing that.
Yeah, zero XP. What do you? Well, it's a bit of a tangent, but what happens to them? Are they still present? Are their characters still present in the?
They are not. Yeah. They are absolutely not. So I practically always.
That's right. You have the return to town. Yeah.
Yeah. So every single session, they have gathered together on this expedition, whoever actually came to the table. If you're not at the table, I never have the character participating.
Yeah. David points out that like Milestone's probably taken a lot of hold because Critical Role uses it in season two. I'm certainly used to seeing them use it. Yep, for sure.
Oh, you're right. You know what? Actually, I haven't watched too much Critical Role, but I specifically actually watched like a 30-second clip of them all leveling up at the same time.
Yep.
So that does actually explain that, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Interesting.
What do you think, Dan, of? So here's one thing that I struggle with a little bit. One of the things that I do like in 5th edition, which I've used in 10 Dead Rats, is having one XP chart for all classes. What do you think about the fact that OD&D changes that and has different leveling rates for different classes?
I'm parsing the OD&D changes that when I just, it's the other way around. But if you see what I mean, right. The original had different XP tables yeah. for every class right. and everything that came after did something different.
Right. Right.
I don't know. What do you think about that actually?
Well, so I like having a single XP chart. There's some oddities in the OD&D XP yeah. chart. For example, every time I'm running an OD&D game at a convention, which we're going to be at a convention next weekend, so I've been doing a lot of convention prep. Every time I do that, I got to generate some characters, and usually my usual method is I use my own tool, which is on paulsgameblog.com under tools. There's OED character generator, and my favorite way to do that is by XP. So I say, generate me a bunch of characters who have 10,000 XP,
right.
and inevitably, what that gives you. Is so for 10,000 XP, you generally get fourth level characters, except the thieves who are level 5. And the thieves are always plus 1. They're always one level higher. True. And I'm like, why? Yeah. Why do the thieves get an extra level? I don't know. I don't see why.
Well, it is because they're weak and they kind of suck. is the answer.
I mean, usually, to be fair, usually I'm picking my XP level based on what level do I want my wizards to be? That's my usually first choice. What level do I want my wizards yep. to be? What kind of magic do I want in this game? And then I say, yep. great, what's an XP level that gets me that level wizard and the same level fighter? And that's how right. I pick my XP amount.
Right. I guess if I run a high level game, like I guess the name level, like I usually pick XP for the fighter, and then usually the thief is one level higher and the wizard's one level lower is what I think.
Yeah.
What I think
yeah. See, I find I prefer to scale by wizard again, just because I like. Are they going to have fireballs? That's important, right? Like, I want to know.
Yeah. Okay. that's great. That's a great point. So interesting. See, it's so interesting. We're having this discussion this weekend because I got an email this week from a reader of my blog named John Miller, mm-hmm. and he had a really interesting observation that I'd never seen before. Originally, it was about my OED house rules. But then it turns out it's totally appropriate just for buy the book OD&D. And that is a particular, so thieves have terrible hit points, right?
Mm-hmm.
When thieves were originally made in supplement 1, and it's the same in BX, they have D4 hit points. So 1D4 yep. at first level, 2D4 at second level, et cetera. They're as weak as a wizard is, and they're actually incredibly fragile in combat. And some people say they were originally intended just to be NPCs.
Yeah. And no one. I mean, and frankly, their skills are terrible, right? Most of their skills are such a low percentage chance, it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, totally true. So one thing that John pointed out is that at particular XP points, they have higher hit point expectations than fighters. Okay. So for example, get that? Thieves have higher hit point expectations at certain XP points. So at 1300 XP, right? Fighter is first level with 1d8 with an expectation of 4.5 hit points. But at that same XP point, thieves are level 2 with 2d4 hit dice with an expectation of 5 hit points, which is actually higher than the fighter at the same XP level.
Yep.
So in some sense, and I'd never thought about this before, but in some sense, that graduated XP chart sort of equates their durability with fighters.
And is that something you want? That's my next question. And then if so, why not just give them more hit points per level? Why this convoluted nonsense?
That's actually what John noticed first, is because I do that.
Yeah.
And he was pointing that out, and I was like, you're right, but you know, this is even true if they only have D4 hit dice.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that I making thieves a little bit more durable is certainly not a mistake moving away from D&D.
So when I was designing 10 Dead Rats, right, I wanted something from second edition Warhammer, which is a career system. So even though there are ultimately 4 classes under the covers, there are like 20 different careers you could have. And I went, I don't want to deal. Warhammer's tradition is that there aren't even levels, that they just, you get XP and then you point by powers or whatever with your XP. And I was like, that's too crunchy for me. I don't want to deal with that. I also don't want to deal with giant, you know, huge numbers of tables. So I said, this is a case where I like 5th edition's change. I'm just going to take their one table to rule them all. There you go.
Gotcha. And you're talking 5th edition D&D, not 5th edition Warhammer.
Correct. There is no such thing as 5th edition Warhammer. They're only on 4.
Fourth. Okay, great.
Yep.
Gotcha. Yeah, you know, I like, I'm not, you know what, I'm not going to be dogmatic about that one way or the other. You know, I played 3rd edition with a unified XP table. I didn't have a big problem with it. You know, when I look at the original, you know, when I look at OD&D's separate tables, I don't mind that thieves look, you know, cheap and fast and quick to die, right?
Yep.
And, you know, fighters look, you know, pricey and durable, and it's going to take a while to level them, and they're going to be sticky. And wizards are, you know, ridiculously expensive, and really got to put a lot of investment into them in order to be, and then become the most powerful things in the game that you have to balance everything around.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind seeing that. I'm not, you know, there are a lot of, you know, weird ass wrinkles and proud nails and things that are weird about it, but I actually kind of like looking at the thief table and immediately getting the idea of they're cheap and they're fast and they die young. I get it. And you're going to be building your second thief real fast and trying to level up really fast.
What are you using these days for multiclassing?
Yeah, I do. So I do a thing where you get to every single session. If you happen to be multi-class, you have to take your XP and you have to pick one of the two classes and you just pump it all in there.
Yep.
So we keep silos.
That's not what I meant, though. What I'm asking is, I'm a level 1 fighter. Or I'm a level 3 fighter. I want to take a level of magic user. How do I do that?
Basically, just by the book, right? Original little brown books say you got to have an ability score of 16. In that new class.
Yep.
And then more or less, you can just start paying. In my game, you just start paying your XP in there. In your class.
Interesting. So no upfront cost. I don't spend any XP or lose anything to get into the new class.
I charge 1,000.
1,000. Oh, just a flat fee. That's fascinating.
Flat fee. Yeah.
Interesting. I've not seen that. Yeah. So I bring that up because what I was doing for a long time, which I thought was out of OED, but maybe it was and you changed it, or maybe I'm imagining this. But what I was doing was you had to pay a level. Whatever your current highest level went down by one. And you gained
the new
level.
That was a house rule that I made. Yeah, that was a house rule that I invented.
And why'd you move away from that?
I have moved away from that, yes.
Why?
I didn't like people leveling down. That's a kind of a pain in the ass logistically to remove a level, decide how many hit points you go down. And I was doing more of an analysis, and I came up with, in theory, if you start as a normal person at level zero and you want to get the first level, that should require 1,000 XP. So at that point, I was like, well, anytime you get a new level now, it's 1,000 XP.
And that's pretty good, and I might just steal that, because here's what I saw. When I was using your highest level and you drop a level, is that players started to immediately game it. What's the cheapest way to get a multi-class character? The answer is start as Thief. Gotcha. Because that's your cheapest level. That costs 1,200. Gotcha. Then you're only paying, then you're dropping by one level, right? You're only losing 1,200 XP.
Right.
Yeah. That was always their answer. It was like, the cheapest thing to do is start as Thief.
Right.
And so that's what they were doing.
Now, I don't think that you enforce the by the book, you need a 16 ability in that new class, right? I don't think you enforce that.
Sorry?
I don't think that you enforce the required 16 for the prime requisite in the new class.
Yeah, I mean, prime recs are a whole separate issue, I think. I do require some prime recs, but I don't do 16.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I find that in my game, you know, because I do enforce that, it's certainly a higher barrier to multi-classing.
Yep.
And now that becomes one of the primary goals for every single player. Every single player is like, how can I raise my ability score in order to unlock multi-classing? I had a particular week where three out of the four players in my game all came to me totally separately to ask, is there any way that I can increase my ability scores to get the 16 to get multi-classing?
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so all of a sudden that becomes actually a major campaign goal.
Interesting. Let me take us down a slightly different road here. I'm scanning the chat. There's a bunch of it, so sorry guys if I'm missing interesting stuff. But Ash has said that if everything's on a treadmill, it feels like fake advancement, right? So that's, I think, another argument against Milestone is that it encourages nothing, right? It's just, it encourages nothing. You play and you go up in levels, right?
I agree. That's what I would think. I mean, I haven't played with it, so I can't report from experience, but I agree what I would expect to happen. And the other thing is, you can see, like, with the granularity of the experience points, you and the players can see, how fast am I getting to the next one? Did I get a quarter of the way there tonight?
Yeah.
Did I get only 10% the way? There's a lot of nights where we go, oh, I just missed the next level. And you have this moment of like, oh, so close, right, but I'm really anticipating next time where I'll clearly level up.
So
that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, so what I was trying to get at is, yeah, I think one of the real benefits to me of a very easy mechanism, and I'm going to argue for that always, the most simplistic way of giving XP as you can with the least amount of math, is that then it's very easy at the end of the session to just quickly say, and you get this much XP. And I think that's huge. I think that's huge because I think players get excited. At the end of every session, I get some amount of XP, and it's an immediate feedback on how well did I accomplish my goals that I set out to do, right? And as a DM, I don't have to keep stinking records about all this stuff, right? Like, I don't have to keep this running tally of like, okay, well, I haven't given you XP in three sessions, so let me go back to my notes of all the stuff you've done for the past three sessions. What a pain in the butt. If I just...
I totally agree with
that. Yeah. Yeah, so I think...
That's a really good thing for me now. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. But that's, I think we're all on the same page here, right? That, like, it's so easy to just say, I know exactly what you killed, add the hit dice, multiply by 100. I know exactly what treasure you got, tally that gold piece total, boom, done.
Yeah. And that can't be a problem. I totally agree. That's a great way to end the session. Everybody's excited about it at the official reward. And the other thing, I mean, we play late at night, so we're wrapping up at midnight. People are, tired. They kind of want to go home at that point. And I would not want to sit there with a calculator, even me, computing a whole bunch of numbers and keeping people there for 15 or 20 minutes doing table lookups in order to determine those rewards. I just want to be, great, we're done. Here's the number.
Yeah.
And I don't want to delay them. And I also don't want to have to rely on away from the table work of me at home, spreadsheet, email everybody or whatever,
yep.
and hope that everybody caught that email and added it up properly and yep. stuff like that.
I think you and I have slightly different methods for this, and I think they're both good. So I'm going to start with mine, and then you can share yours. So generally what I do is I have a pad of paper next to me. Every time the players pick up a piece of treasure or kill a monster, I immediately jot down how much XP that's worth. And I just keep this running tally, because it's super easy. And then at the end, I add up those numbers, and away we go.
Yeah. I'm pretty similar. I mean, what I do is I have, you know, I have these index cards, as you know, at my table.
Yep.
And every, you know, encounter or fight, I've got the monsters on it. And then whatever treasure they pick up at the end, I just jot that usually like at the bottom right of the index cards. Here's the yep. total hit dice from this session, and here's the total treasure. Bam. And then I can just, at the end, just leap through the four index cards, and I'll add that up all up really easily.
That I think that's actually, that's pretty clever. What's that?
Yeah. And then you get to, and I actually do keep that as a record sometimes or scan them. And then you actually do get to go through the leveling process together in person, right? So
yeah.
just like Critical Role does, we're rolling the dice. We get to witness that. We get to kind of have a surprise about that. Players yep. get to ask me about like what are their options for spells or maybe a feat or something like that. And you get to do that live and, yep. and know what you're going to have on the table next time.
So we actually had that for the first time just last Thursday on 10 Dead Rats. So pretty much everyone, all three out of four leveled up. And so at the very end of the session, you can see them leveling up. Now, I cut it a little short just because the time restrictions of that stream. You know, they rolled their extra hit points. They were excited and happy about leveling up. And then they got to the like, oh, now I have a decision to make. I get to choose a talent. Which one do I want? And I was like, great. You guys think about that. We can answer those questions next time.
Right, right. And that's fine if they want to. That totally makes sense. And it's actually, I think, better to explicate that before you leave rather than like maybe have them be surprised by that at the start of the next session.
Yeah,
and then
true.
Be scrambling to make that decision poorly thought out right before you're about to play again.
Yep. Totally agree. So for me, so this is where I ended up. Let me give you the full spiel and you can maybe react to this. So for 10 Dead Rats, what I ended up with is ambition based XP, which is actually in 4th edition Warhammer, it's there as a bonus. You get these ambitions and you write them down. You know, I want to find a crossbow, I want to reach Altdorf, I want to, you know, avenge my dead father, whatever. And when you hit one of those, when you actually accomplish that goal, you get an XP award. And in 4th edition Warhammer, it's a little bonus. It's not going to level you up probably, right? It's a little extra. In 10 Dead Rats, I hung my hat on it. I said, this is it. This is the one and only way to get XP in 10 Dead Rats. And I have each player has one player level goal, which is worth about an eighth of a level worth of XP.
Okay.
And the party collectively can come up with a party goal. And if the party achieves that, they all get about a half a level's worth of XP.
Cool. That's it. I think that's really cool, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I had to jimmy the math, and I struggled with the math a bit to come up with how do I express well what an eighth of a level and a half of a level worth of XP is. And honestly, I struggled with it a little bit because I was like, it feels like I'm just flattening the table. Why am I bothering to do this? This is very close to milestone XP, right? Why don't I just, why don't I just have a flat 100 XP per level and then I can just use flat numbers? But then again, the reason for not doing that is because I want geometric progression so that players can join back in and have disparate levels and catch up with each other.
Right.
So anyway, eventually I figured out the most concise way to put that math into my book, and it's there.
That's cool.
Which made me discover something very interesting about the D&D Fighter XP chart, which is the delta, the amount of XP you need to get to level 2 is the same as the delta of what you need to get to level 3. And only after level 3 does it ramp up.
Yeah. And
that's,
it's weird because when I've run simulations, right, because of that and because the awards are higher at level 2, right, you're more likely to speed through level 2 relatively quickly. So on a time-based aspect, you're pretty likely to spend quite a bit of time. Where's the camera here? Quite a bit of time at level 1. Level 2 doesn't take very long, right?
Yeah.
And then level 3, 4, 5, you're spending more time at that. But level 2 is the one you're more likely to speed through.
That's interesting. as a counterpoint, if you look at the XP charts in 5th edition D&D, there are a couple levels that stand out as unusual. One of them is level 1, which only requires now 300 XP in 5th edition, which 5th edition XP numbers are still kind of on par with OD&D in the general sense, at least in the first couple levels, except that 1 is way low. Way low.
Yeah, I think I read Merle's or Perkins that, you know, and there is no formula that will produce the 5th edition numbers. Yep. They absolutely totally picked them by complete fiat just to speed people to the levels that their surveys said were the most interesting.
Well, that's the thing, right, is they sort of develop those numbers. They may have started at something that is some math formula, but then they almost like genetic algorithm did, right? They sort of, they use their agile process of gather feedback, adjust, iterate, test. And they ended up with these weird numbers, right? Like 10th level is the other one that jumps out. The amount of XP you need to get through 10th to complete 10th level is surprisingly low compared to the other levels. And that's from feedback of, that's where the interesting data point is. They said that's where most campaigns end, is a lot of campaigns are ending at 10th level. So we're just going to drop the XP so they can we can bump you to level 11 quickly and give you that jolt of energy. I think that's incredibly myopic, honestly. I think that's like, I don't think that's really the problem. I think that maybe the problem is that level 10 should be the top.
I think that would be better, actually. It does grate me a little bit not to have some kind of regular formula to those XP numbers.
Yeah.
I would really, having that be a finagled and hand-tuned sounds like someone with their thumb on the scale, frankly. And
it's pretty weird. And now if you scroll back in our chat somewhere up there, I think you're going to see a couple of our listeners talking about how stuff above level 10 to 20 in 5th edition is super weird and difficult to deal with. And that makes sense.
Well, that's the first time I've ever heard that about any D&D edition.
Totally fair. Totally fair. You know, it's funny. One of the reasons I went to BX and that I really liked BX as opposed to, say, Mensa Basic or Rules Cyclopedia, which was quite popular at that time, or at least amongst the people who cared about basic D&D, is that I like the lack of a companion set. And I know some people have put effort into back create a companion set for Mulvey BX, but I think that ending at level 14 is perfect. I think that's
and of course the Adventure Conqueror King guys, you know, have a backfilled companion just like you're talking about there.
Yeah, I've seen some of that. I've seen that, and I don't want it. I think that's unnecessary. I think the reason you make it right is I think that actually in the text of the expert book it actually references the upcoming companion book, and it never existed. And so I'm sure it's not intentional, but I think it's perfect.
It feels really nice. I mean, Moldvay Cook, that the BX set is so nice and is so close to my favorite set, and they made so many good decisions. And I agree with that. When I put the expert set in my hand, it feels complete. It feels nicely complete. It feels nicely balanced. I've never looked at that 14th ending at 14 and felt like that was a problem.
Yep. I've never had a game where I was like, geez,
I really need 15th level rules. This you know, my game is not working without a 15th level character.
I find when a campaign reaches that level, usually what I want is to sunset it. I want to or at least sunset those characters. Right? Let's introduce new blood into the game. Let's do something different. This is getting stale. Let's have your characters, they buy a castle or whatever, and then they hire some young new group, and let's play the new group. Like, we can still have our campaign world live on through the shared world, but these characters, let's face it, they're done.
I will admit that in my blindered view, I tend not to think that way. I guess I haven't hit that ceiling where I ever felt that way. But on the other hand, you know, another thing is that, you know, original D&D had tables through 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. the highest level NPCs they ever referred to were like 11th or 12th. They had a line of rules whereby the levels just go on indefinitely. These, you know, the tables are not the end of the characters. You can just keep adding more spells. Here's a rule for adding spells indefinitely to the wizards. Maybe I'm not going to actively use it, but I like four lines of text that say, here's the rest of the story, right? I actually feel pretty good about that.
The problem I have with that is that there is no top of the chart. So you end up with these problems like the, which book was it? One of the original supplements that stats out gods, and they're like really weak by comparison to, say, the upper echelons of characters.
You know, not a bad point. Not a bad point. Yeah. But I will say this, when you switch the Greyhawk supplement and they start expanding to higher spell levels, because remember the LBBs, just like Cook BX, right? The highest spell level is 6.
Yep.
Great. That works. The highest spell level is the instant death spell and the reincarnation spell and the stop times, and the destroy all magic spell. That feels about right to me. And then in the first supplement, you add levels 7, 8, 9, and that whole thing's always been a hot mess. It's a huge, ridiculous hot mess of stuff that's actually weaker and stuff that doesn't make sense and stuff that doesn't have a mythological basis to it. And so if I have the Cook BX rules, I really like not having spell levels above 6.
Honestly, I find that even in 5th edition, where my 5th edition game is approaching level 12-ish, I think. I think we're 12. Okay. And yeah, I'm playing a wizard who's got some of these very high-level spells, and I'm like, the high-level spells are weird? When I'm trying to pick my spells, I'm like, which of the 5th, 6th, 7th level spells do I... They're weird. And it also breaks my brain a little bit that, like, I guess Fireball isn't as cool as it used to be. Used to be awesome. Right. And now it's starting to be like, eh.
Right. I agree.
Which is weird.
I think that's an echo ever since 1975 when they had to, like, here, we're great. You like D&D? Here's more D&D. We're going to expand it. And that whole upper echelon of spells has, to my mind, been not terribly in great taste.
So because we're running a little long on time, but let me just introduce one last topic for us real quick, because William asked, what do folks think about individual XP awards, e.g. Julie engaged in novel, clever, in-character play, here's 100 XP. What do you think about those sort of like good role play bonuses, or, you know, pure DM fiat, here's an extra XP for this one specific player?
I don't do that. I don't do that, with the sole exception is if Thief goes off on their own and like steals treasure. That's the only time I ever do that. XP for magic items.
Dan, your network is getting a little choppy here, and it looks like we're starting to lose you. That's unfortunate. Sorry, viewers. Dan has been frozen in time. Hopefully his internet starts to come through for us. Hoping, crossing my fingers. Let me just opine for a few moments about my views on individual XP. I don't like them. I haven't used them in a long time, and the reason I don't use them is the problem I have with that kind of award is that it always seems to feel imbalanced in terms of who gets them, right? There's certain types of players. It specifically awards a certain almost personality type of player. They seem to be always the one getting it. And it starts to just feel, I don't know, not great to me, right? I'd much rather award the group as a whole. That's why I would prefer stuff like party-based ambitions. Now, I know I'm dabbling my feet a little bit in 10 Dead Rats with individual player-based XP awards, individual player ambitions, but I am keeping very close tabs on that. I think, as was mentioned in the chat, I do have to keep very close tabs on who's got what ambition and how close they are, and I do try to help my players craft them. Individual player ambitions, I always set the bar as expectation of, you're going to accomplish this in 1 to 3 sessions max, and if after 3 sessions you haven't done it, we really should do something else. All right, folks, it looks like we've lost Dan, unfortunately. So here we go. It looks like I am I'm on my own to close the show. If Dan can figure out how to get back on, we will see him again. But if not, here we go. So Thank you so much for joining us on Wandering DMs today. If you have any thoughts about XP, how to award it, how leveling should work, how to get players, how to incorporate new players who are being introduced to an existing higher than level one group, please post that in our comments here. We would love to hear from you. We'd love to hear what you use. And if you have any ideas for future conversations you'd like to hear about this topic, please drop them in the chat, and we will be very pleased to talk about it in the future. As always, please like, subscribe, whatever you're wherever you're watching for us. Please leave us. This is the part that Dan usually does, so sorry that I struggle on it. Please like and subscribe. That helps us actually out quite a lot. It helps other folks find our show, so please do that if you're able. what else? Our shows are also available in audio-only podcast versions. You can find those on our website, wanderingdms.com. You can also find those on other podcast carriers such as iTunes and Google Podcasts and Spotify and all those places. If you are listening to this show on such a podcast carrier, please take a moment to rate and review us. We really appreciate it. And as always, huge thanks to our patrons on our Patreon. Our Patreon can be found on patreon.com/wanderingdms. Please check us out there and consider becoming a patron. There's all kinds of special videos that you get access to. You can also help direct some of our content for our future shows. You can have a little influence. And you can have some peeks behind the screen on how we make this stuff. There's a whole series of interesting videos that Dan and I did on a recent on our live play game from my birthday, and we give a little peek behind the screen about how that was run. So please come check us out. That's on patreon.com/wanderingdms. As always, our show is live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern, so please come back and join us next week, and until then, see you then.